Cancer can take away all my physical abilities. It cannot touch my mind, it cannot touch my heart, and it cannot touch my soul. And those three things are going to carry on forever.
Welcome back to the Voices for Victory podcast. I'm your host, Nick McDonald. Each year in April, the V Foundation hosts our Virginia Vine event. It highlights Virginia's wine and renowned cancer research centers while raising money to support life-saving cancer research. Unfortunately, like many other events in the spring last year, the 2020 version of Virginia Vine had to be canceled. Well, even though it'll look a little different this year, we're very excited that Virginia Vine is back and it's set for April 24th. Today, we'll look ahead to this year's Virginia Vine event. First up, we're joined by the V Foundation's Director of Signature Events, Danielle Lavitin. She gives us a full rundown of what we can expect at this year's event and how you can be a part of it. Then we're joined by a special guest from each of Virginia Vine's mission partners. First up, Dr. Jose Trevino, the Surgeon-in-Chief at the VCU Massey Cancer Center, stops by to chat about his personal connection to the V Foundation and where he sees the future of cancer research heading. Finally, we chat with Dr. Tom Loughran, the Director of the University of Virginia Cancer Center, about why partnering with the V Foundation is so important to them and how cancer research has changed over his decades in the field. First up, our conversation with Danielle Lavitin.
And I always have to think about what's important in life is to think to me of three things: where you started, where you are, and where you're going to be. Those are the three things that I try and do every day.
And we're now joined on the Voices for Victory podcast by Danielle Lavitin. Danielle, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I know you're super busy right now, so I appreciate you taking a few minutes to talk with us, getting ready for our Virginia Vine event, which is set for April 24th. Of course, with everything that happened last year, we couldn't have the event, so I know how excited you are to bring the event back this year. Can you kind of give our listeners a feel for what Virginia Vine is going to look like this year?
Yeah, absolutely. And yes, we're very excited to be having an event in this new space where we can keep everybody safe and healthy and yet still have a very dynamic program and hopefully a successful fundraiser to raise these valuable dollars for our organization. So this year's Virginia Vine is going to be a virtual fundraiser. But the unique part about it this year is that, well, there's actually a couple of unique pieces. One, we are going to be bringing Virginia to the attendees, even if they can't come to Virginia. So we structured our program where we are bringing Virginia Vine straight to your living room through our YouTube Live, through another interactive opportunity that I'll talk about in a minute. And we will really be, we will actually be delivering the Virginia wine and food right from Virginia straight to people's homes so that they can feel like they are at Virginia Vine.
Yeah, it's so cool how you and your team have done such a great job, and the Virginia Vine team of putting this event together to kind of give people that opportunity. You mentioned the YouTube Live, and I know you're also using a platform called Remo. Can you tell us a little bit about how that's going to work and how people will be able to experience the event?
Yeah, absolutely. It's important to note that Virginia Vine is actually two programs this year. The first one is our inaugural Voices for Victory program, which is going to be amazing. It's going to have two panels for the audience to listen to conversation. The first panel is going to be our researchers talking about their work in immunotherapy. And following that is going to be a panel of our sports legends, Jay Billis, Derek Wittenberg, and Ralph Sampson, who are going to all talk about their connection to cancer, their connection to sports, and really tie it all together. So that program is going to be available on YouTube Live. To answer your question, Mick, regarding Remo, which is a new platform that we're planning to use, Remo was developed, I believe, in response to kind of all of this new virtual event space that we're all living in and have been living in for the last year. And what this platform does is it really addresses the gap that people were feeling in virtual events where they didn't get a chance to talk to other people at their table. And so we really wanted to make that a key piece of Virginia Vine this year. So people will be able to log into Remo just as you would any other platform, simple username and password. And they'll be in the virtual ballroom at a virtual table where they'll be able to video message with the people at their table. They'll be able to switch tables and move around. And probably most exciting is they'll be able to talk to our featured guests. So at some point in the program, Joe Theismann and Jay Billis who are Jay Billis is our featured guest for the evening program, and Joe Theismann is our wonderful returning host, and they will be able to interact directly with them through video messages at certain points in the program.
Yeah, and for anyone who hasn't used Remo, it's a really cool platform. You know, we internally at the V Foundation used it for one of our staff meetings, and it, just being able to hop around to different tables and jump into conversations, it really gives you that feel that you're at an event like this, which I think is, I'm sure for you, Danielle, is tough, because that's one of the biggest reasons people want to attend events like this, right? Is to be able to hop around, chit chat with people, see people there, or catch up with people they haven't seen in a while. And Remo really gives you that feeling. I think it's a very cool platform that you guys have chosen.
Good. I'm so glad that you liked it. And yes, at our staff meeting, people seem to really have a great response to it. That was one of the biggest things to me and my team when we're coming out of 2020 and into 2021. How are we going to address what we've missed? What are people really craving this year as we continue to be in this virtual event space? And definitely having that networking and that one-on-one interaction we heard was really important. So we definitely wanted to provide that opportunity. And I think also what one of the great things about Virginia Vine's setup this year is we're really making it customizable to the audience. If somebody wants to join on Remo and have video messaging chats with other people, they can. If they would prefer to just watch on YouTube like they were watching a TV show and kick back with the wine that we're sending them, they can do that too. It's just really a great opportunity to have the event experience that you as the attendee want to have.
Yeah, I think it's cool that it's sort of personalized like that. And also, another thing that I really think is great about the way that you and your team have set it up this year, maybe a silver lining, if you will, is that you know, people from anywhere can join. You know, in a normal year, you've got to be able to get to Virginia to come to this great event that the V Foundation always holds. But you know, this year, if you've got an internet connection, you can take part, right? So, how can people learn more? Where can they go to register for the event? What do people need to do to be a part of it?
Absolutely. I do have to give a quick shout out to the two people who have registered from Hawaii and from Texas. So you're right. We definitely have expanded our reach for this event, and that will just lead us to a bigger and bigger event in 2022 and beyond. So we're excited. Kind of been thinking about how I can hand out an award for the furthest traveled person. virtual traveler, I guess, is really what I should title that award. But anyways, yes, we would love to have more people join us and really customize their event experience this year. So the best way to join Virginia Vine is to go to v.org/Virginia Vine and click on the register button. There's a series of questions that we are asking everybody, mainly that involves the food and wine and what type of experience they want to have with Virginia Vine this year. So if people go to that website and click on register, they can go through the process very quick and easy. And then also, if they have any additional questions, they can email us at events@v.org.
And I know another great opportunity around this Virginia Vine event too, Danielle, is the amazing auction that you have planned. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about what they could expect from the auction this year?
Absolutely. Yes, we've got a very fun, lively auction planned. Right now, we're looking at having about 8 live lots, and they range in anything from experiences, tickets to our other wonderful events that the V Foundation has across the country, and just a wide range of experiences and opportunities that people local to Virginia, but also anyone nationwide can enjoy. Part of our auction also includes our fund-a-need, which this year we're focusing on immunotherapy. Donating to our fund-a-need is a great way to support the V Foundation's research program.
Yeah, and I can just say, as someone who's seen these events that our signature events team puts together, this auction is something you want to check out, because I know some of these experiences and things that are going to be up are going to be really cool. So you do not want to miss that. And then, you know, it's not the party's not over after the auction, right? I know you guys have a really fun after party planned as well. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, definitely. So we have our main program is from 6 to about 7:30, and that's where we're going to do our auction and hear from Jay Billis, which I'm really, really excited about. And then starting at 8 o'clock that night, we have our after party. And so we have two amazing Nashville-based singer-songwriters, Paul Overstreet and Neil Thrasher, who are going to be live with us in person as we broadcast from Stone Tower Winery. And they're going to play a handful of their songs and tell us the stories behind them, as well as their connections to cancer. So we have a full day on April 24th, packed with great experiences, great people, our lovely hosts, and it's just going to be a really exciting day. So I hope more people will be joining us.
Well, it's going to be a full day. You could even say it's going to be a heck of a day raising money for cancer research. Danielle, I know your team is working around the clock and trying to make this event as good as it can be. And I think in a perfect world, you'd love to be able to have your normal in-person event. But I do think this virtual plan that you and your team have come up with is really cool. And I think giving people across the country the chance to be involved and experience it is going to be really great. So kudos to you and your team for putting it together. And I know we're all looking forward to April 24th.
Yes, absolutely. And I will pass along your kudos to the team and to our event committee and our honorary advisory board, who we definitely could not do all of this without. So big applause all around.
And best of luck to you and the team in putting the event together, Danny. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Mick.
And now we chat with Dr. Jose Trevino. We are now joined on the Voices for Victory podcast by Dr. Jose Trevino. Dr. Trevino, thanks for taking a few minutes to chat with us today.
Good morning.
So I want to get into a few different things with you today, Dr. Trevino. But first off, we're very excited about our upcoming Virginia Vine event. Thankful to have the VCU Maxey Cancer Center on board as a mission partner. Just kind of generally for you all there, why is it so important for you at the Maxey Cancer Center to partner and team up with organizations like the V Foundation?
Well, you know, I have to say that I have a long history with the V Foundation, and I've been kind of reaping the rewards of its inception and obviously how it's done, what it's done for researchers over, you know, the past decade, if not longer. I was originally at a prior institution where it was really important for a young surgeon scientist or physician scientist like myself to think about getting extramural funding. I mean, that's kind of the key for all researchers in this country, is to develop a way or a means to maintain a laboratory doing great research through what we consider extramural funding, or funding from extra sources outside of your own department or division. And a lot of physician scientists are kind of what we call a dying breed, because imagine that you're a clinician and you have clinical responsibilities, and then you're being asked to perform some great research that is going to hopefully one day affect all patients with cancer. And as you're trying to balance all aspects of your life, you realize that you're in competition with a lot of other great cancer researchers around the country. And as you can imagine, that can be pretty competitive. And in the current state of events, or the current state of how things have been, the problem is that funding can be difficult to obtain, especially through the government institutions such as the National Institute of Health. I mean, it's incredibly competitive now, that you literally have to get almost the eighth percentile of a grant. You have to be one of the top eighth percentile, so you have to be up there very high in a good score to be able to get funding to support your work. And as you can imagine, after years and years and years of not being able to obtain funding, you'll lose the opportunity to do the research that we're doing. And so, you know, as I said earlier, I have a history with the V Foundation, in that as I was young and working toward development of a laboratory looking at the effects of cancer and how it debilitates our patients, I applied for a V Scholar Award in 2004, 2005, and I was honored to get that. As you know, it was the first grant I had ever gotten, and being a faculty member for 4 years, there's no question that there was a little bit of loss of hope that I was never going to be able to get funding. And so for me at that time, when I was able to obtain the V Scholar Award through the V Foundation, that was amazing. I mean, that was the first grant I had ever gotten, and that really promoted my career. And that kind of built the foundation of funding and the allowance of me to be able to continue to do the work that I was doing for the time period of the funding mechanism through the V Foundation, but also to apply for other grants that subsequently I was able to get. And so it was a kind of a last minute kind of ditch effort to apply for this award and then subsequently get it. And it was a godsend to some degree because, again, it allowed me to move forward. So why is this, you know, the V Foundation important for Massey, as well as other great institutions that are part that are partnering with the V Foundation, is because it allows the young investigators like myself, it allows mechanisms for us to really start continuing our passion in the work that we're doing, because it's not easy, and the V Foundation has done an amazing job supporting researchers around the country. Whether they be early stage or kind of a later stage, it's an amazing foundation that allows for that growth.
And I think what's interesting, Dr. Trevino, from different researchers that I talked to, that we funded in different ways, and you know, you were a beneficiary of our V Scholar program, which helps early early career investigators, and we have several different types of grants that we award, as you mentioned, for people that are later on in their careers as well. But one thing that I tend to see kind of across the board is how any researcher who receives a grant from the V Foundation, they cannot stop talking about how important it was to them, whether they're just starting their lab and it's really getting them going, or if it's something that kind of gets them across the line in a clinical trial later on, whatever it is, they see the importance of organizations like what the V Foundation is doing. Is that kind of known in the scientific and research community how important, you know, these kind of grants and awards are?
It's interesting as a young investigator, when I initially got this award, I didn't realize the impact of how important this award was going to be for my career. You got to think of it this way. A cancer center director chooses you amongst maybe less than a handful of other people to apply for these awards. And sometimes it's only one person that gets selected for this. And so you're competing internally with a whole host of young investigators or even a later stage investigators, and you get chosen to be the one to submit a what would be a competitive grant to the V Foundation. And so I think that the older gentlemen and the people that have been doing this for much longer than I recognize the importance of this and supported the applications for this. But it isn't until later on in life that you realize, how impactful this can be and why this makes such a difference. I was the V Scholar, one of the V Scholars, and from 2005 to 2008 is, I think, was the extension of my award for the V Scholar Award. But since then, I have been very much involved with the V Foundation and its impact around the country. And I think that that's been the key thing for me, is that this is a growing foundation that has helped numerous, if not hundreds, if not thousands of investigators throughout the country throughout its inception. And the impact's only getting bigger and bigger. And so we see this on TV. We see the V Foundation being publicized, ESPN and what have you. And it's important because what it does is pulls in celebrities, it pulls in researchers, it pulls in all different peoples from all walks of life that come together for one mission, and that's to defeat cancer, right? And to be able to cure cancer. And it's that we never give up in the fight against cancer. And that's the continuing theme. And I think over time and as we start to maneuver more in the direction of increased funding for researchers, the V Foundation, I think, will continue to make an impact along the way, because people will know that the V Foundation was one of the earlier extramural funding operations that have impacted a great deal of investigators. And so do I feel that that we recognized back then when I got the award the importance of this as a young investigator? I would say no. But as I maneuvered through and had the support of the V Foundation and the support of others within the V Foundation, it became very apparent that this was a remarkable organization that was going to help researchers around the country, if not the world, to do some great work to cure cancer.
Yeah, and Dr. Trevino, you mentioned the importance of continuing to fund more research, and the V Foundation goes about that in many different ways. And our Virginia Vine event that's coming up is an important part of that for us to continue to raise more dollars to fund more research. And our focus of the Virginia Vine event this year is on immunotherapy. And I think, you know, people who listen to this podcast, I'm sure, have heard about immunotherapy and know how popular it's become in cancer research these days. Can you just kind of give us a sort of big picture overview of why immunotherapy has become such an important part of cancer research?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's interesting. I was just talking to some colleagues of mine and actually listening to physicians and physician scientists try to talk to lay people about what immunotherapy is, people who have no real research background, because immunotherapy can sound like a very big word and can be very, to some degree, intimidating for people when they hear it. Immunotherapy for me is fairly simplified. I mean, it's what I think is where cancer research is really making the biggest impact. And so what we're doing is, to some degree, using our own body to really fight off the cancer. And the way I personally look at cancer, and the way that this is my personal opinion, is that cancer has a way of hiding itself from our immune system. In other words, it hides in a way that it doesn't allow our body to recognize it as being something that's bad, and it doesn't allow our body to treat it within itself. And so with immunotherapy, what we're doing is really figuring out ways to kind of ramp up, to kind of increase the surveillance of our immune system, to increase our ability to detect the cancer and ultimately kill it. And it's a little bit different than what we've done in the past, where we've really just injected people with chemotherapies and treated them with radiation and surgery. And to some degree, those are all, you know, worthwhile, if you think about it, chemotherapy is just the injection of toxins into a body in the hopes that we're going to kill the cancer before we kill the patient. I mean, and that sounds fairly critical of chemotherapies, but and honest to God, that's what we're doing. And we're hoping that the chemotherapy will have an effect on the cancer, but it also has a significant effect on the patient overall. And so the idea of immunotherapy is that we're going to somehow maneuver our immune system to detect the cancer better, to be able to assure that the cancer is pretty much suggested as being foreign, and then ultimately with these immunotherapies increase the ability of our own immune cells to kill the cancer and control the disease progression. And so you know, the idea of the novel immunotherapies really is revolutionized the way we treat cancer in the year 2021, and you know, obviously before, when we really started doing this almost a decade ago, and really started maneuvering into the real importance of this over the past five, if not less than that, years. And so as we do that, as we start to work that forward, we're really starting this as a foundation for how we can use our own body and we can help our own body fight cancer. And I think that's incredibly important.
Yeah. And I wonder too, is part of the idea here, obviously, you know, developing new treatments and new ways to kind of attack cancer from a different angle, but then it is a pun intended, a side effect of this, that then you would also have less, you know, negative side effects for patients who are undergoing this type of treatment versus, you know, stronger chemotherapy. Is that part of this too?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I had mentioned, in the sense that, yeah, so this chemotherapy is a toxin. And so the idea for the immunotherapy is that there will be less side effects on our patients and better tolerability. You know, we're pretty much just feeding our own system to work better toward finding cancer and killing cancer. And that's the hope with immunotherapy. Don't get me wrong. Everything has a consequence. Everything has a good, and to some degree has a bad consequence. These therapies are by no means benign, but They are a lot better than the therapies that we have had in the past, where we were injecting people with chemotherapies that could hurt our patients more. So yeah, the immunotherapy angle is novel, and it's a new way of doing things. And I hope, as I said, that this would be a foundation for the development of better therapies, and whether they be immunotherapies or others, where we can really use our own body to kill the cancer. And as we progress in the research that we're doing, and this is something that I do a lot of, and I think that most investigators who understand the disease processes amongst many cancers, is to really identify the differences within the cancer subtypes, within different cancers. So in brief, just saying that colon cancer is clearly much different than breast cancer, and breast cancer is clearly much different than pancreatic cancer. Not only doing that, but also looking at how our patients with one particular cancer are different within their own population. For instance, we are now considering subtypes of pancreatic cancer. And now we're considering the fact that your race, ethnicity, and ancestry affects your ability to control the disease and ability to tolerate certain therapies. And, you know, as we're going deeper and deeper to really realizing that we're all made incredibly special, and that God made us all in a way that we should be very, very keen on. We should be very clear that everybody has an ability to respond to their cancer different, and therefore our research and my research in the future is to exploit that, is to really figure out what is it about me as a Latino male who has, you know, this much ancestry from this population and this and other populations, and how will my body be able to tolerate a certain therapy, and how will that affect my ability to fight off a certain cancer? And so it's complicated as we start maneuvering in that direction, but I think that immunotherapies have suggested that there are certain patients that do better than others. And so as we start digging and digging further into the research, and, you know, people start to look at what makes us incredibly unique, and we start to personalize our therapies, that's gonna make a huge impact. And so the future, I see the future of cancer research being more personalized to the person, to their background, to their ancestry, and that's gonna change everything. And that's what I'm hoping, it changes everything.
Yeah, I think that's such an important point to bring up, the individualization of treatment kind of being the future. What I think people tend to generally just think, okay, we're looking for a cure to cancer. And sure, but as you mentioned, you know, every type of cancer is different. We're now, like you said, seeing subtypes in these cancers, and then people are different and people react to treatments differently. They react to different kinds of cancers differently. So I think it's a really important point for people to know, kind of keep in mind what you just mentioned there too. And you mentioned the future of cancer research, personalized treatments. Is that kind of the key for you moving forward? Sort of personalization, is that the biggest thing for you?
Yeah, and it is. So the reason that I got into cancer research and the reason that I picked up on this is obviously goes way, way back to when I was a kid. You know, my dad is a surgeon, and he would round with me in the morning. And so I could see the effects of cancer on some of his patients as I would walk by their rooms. And it was sad because, you know, back then, and I don't want to say it's too long ago and give away my age, but it was sad watching people die with no hope. It's, you could see it. And the key thing that led me to not only be a surgeon to deal with cancer, but also a researcher, was knowing that we were limited in what we could do as surgeons. I mean, we could only take out so much of a person's body without having them be negatively affected, and they would have a bad consequence. And so as I got into the research and I started to have a medical practice for myself, and I started to work with patients, I started to see as I said earlier, the differences amongst different people and different races and different ethnicities. And so while I was doing some research on muscle wasting and how we could affect muscle wasting in patient populations, and we were doing signaling and looking at cancer on to some degree an individualized level, I realized that, blacks were doing worse than whites. And it was important to me because I wanted to know, why is it that certain people in this country of a different race, of different ethnicities, do worse than others? And so while we talk about individualization of therapies and personalization of therapies, I think that that was the key thing for me, is to really look at what is it about who we are, how we are genetically made, that allows us to have certain therapies that work better than others. And the key thing I like to say sometimes in my talks is that, listen, 40, 50, 60 years ago, everybody got treated with the same therapy. Everybody got treated with if you had cancer, you got treated with this therapy. And it was all the way around. You know, and as we progressed and we got smarter about the cancers, and we got a better feel for what they could be or and how they were different, we changed our therapies to be specialized toward the cancer itself. And now I see the future of cancer research and the future of cancer therapies being now, yes, we have to put into consideration the type of cancer the patient has, but now we have to put into consideration who the patient is. And I say this a lot when I give my talks as well. I say, are we treating the tumor? Are we treating the patient? And the answer is, we're treating the patient, because the patient is the most important aspect of what we do. And so sometimes I feel that we lose focus because we're so concentrated on killing the cancer, and we forget that there's a human being that has a life, that has family, that has loved one that wants to have a quality of life. And so we really have to be holistic in our therapies and include every aspect of a person's life. And so I think the future of cancer research and cancer therapies, as I says, is going to be that we start looking at this holistically, going all the way down to the gene level of what makes us who we are individually. And when we do that, I think we're going to make an incredible impact on cancer cancer therapies. And this is where I see the cure for cancer being.
Yeah, well, Dr. Trevino, I think that's a nice optimistic outlook on some positive things that have come, through the years here. I know at the V Foundation, we're so thankful to have funded great researchers and scientists like yourself and many others who continue to do great work. And we're so thankful to have the VCU Massey Cancer Center on board as a mission partner for the Virginia Vine event coming up in late April. Dr. Trevino, thanks so much for stopping by and chatting with us for a few minutes. We hope that we can talk again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Mick. And we hope to, I hope to be a continued part of the V Foundation for Cancer Research. And there's no question that we got to keep fighting and never give up.
Finally, our conversation with Dr. Tom Loughran. And we are now joined by Dr. Tom Loughran. Dr. Loughran, thanks so much for taking a few minutes to talk with us today.
Sure. It's great to do so, Mick.
I want to start a couple of things I want to get into with you today. I want to start with we have the Virginia Vine event coming up at the end of April, and we're so pleased to have UVA as a mission partner in the event. Why is it so important for you all at the UVA Cancer Center to support events like Virginia Vine and organizations like the V Foundation?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's really very important for UVA to be a partner with the V Foundation. The V Foundation has been very successful in raising money for all types of cancer research, whether it's basic research, clinical research, population research, or translational research. UVA Cancer Center is one of only 71 NCI-designated cancer centers across the country. So we're committed to excellence in all those areas. We have a significant amount of funding, but funding is always challenging. And the beauty of the V Foundation is, in addition to raising awareness of the of cancer and the risk of cancer, it's really raising money for important seed projects. So with grants being, with successful grants of only really around 10% or so, it's very important to have a lot of preliminary data already established that convinces the review panel that you're able to complete the work that you're suggesting in the grant. And that's where the philanthropy comes in terms of giving a great start for all our fantastic investigators. So again, we're really pleased to be part of the V Foundation and the Virginia Wine event, which we've been doing since the event's start.
And I know in speaking to different researchers who've received funding from the V Foundation,
yes,
especially young investigators who receive funding, it's really important for them because it can be difficult to get funding when you're starting a lab or just getting going. As someone who I know has worked with a lot of young researchers who are just getting going, how have you seen the importance of funding like this to those young researchers?
Mick, I really am pleased that you brought this up because although there's an increased funding over the past few years, the NCI, there is a tremendous number of new investigators entering the field of cancer research, probably because we are really on the verge of doing something great for cancer patients. So it's extremely competitive now, more so than when I started 30 or more years ago in research. And it's critical that the emerging new faculty have support in the beginning phases of their career. The funding crisis is going on now for 10 to 15 years. And I think we really have lost a number of key, the phrase is we've lost a generation of researchers because we're not being able to support them from the beginning. So this is a really prime effort that is a focus of all cancer center directors and the cancer center community is to support the junior investigators and make sure that they're successful.
The focus of Virginia Vine's fundraising this year is going to be on immunotherapy, which I think our listeners are certainly aware of and know about it. It's been a popular topic in cancer research circles for many years now. I wonder just sort of generally, what is it about immunotherapy that has kind of made it like the hot button topic when it comes to cancer research?
Yeah, so this is really interesting because this is a kind of, we were just talking about losing a generation of researchers. There's been spectacular advances in cancer research in the field of immunotherapy in the past decade. But I don't think the public is aware that this research goes back 30 to 40 years. And probably the very first demonstration that the immune system is important for preventing or fighting cancer comes from the experience of the Seattle marrow transplant team. And I was a part of that actually in my early days, where became really clear that if a patient received a new donor immune system in terms of getting a bone marrow transplant, their chances of being cured from their refractory leukemia was substantially improved compared to people who got like their own bone marrow back. So introducing a foreign immune system really fought off the leukemia, prevented it from coming back. A friend of mine, Carl Jin, was a fellow there with me at the Hutch. And he's really one of the main people developing CAR T-cell therapy. And he struggled early on to convince anyone to give him any money because this whole concept of the immune system fighting cancer, well established in animal models for generations, decades, but no real proof it was going to work in humans. So I think the main startling revolution in this whole field is that we're now able to treat patients who failed all therapies, and we really have very effective ways of harnessing the power of the immune system with immunotherapy. And it's been surprising that a number of cancers that we never thought could be fought by with immunotherapy are very responsive to treatment, like lung cancer, for example. No one really thought that the immune system was involved in fighting off lung cancer, but it's one of the more spectacular advances in the field.
Yeah, that's interesting you bring that up, that, you know, this has really been around for a long time, but maybe has gained popularity and you know, people are more aware of it in the past decade or so. But
yes,
it's interesting you mentioned that there's been some new advances and some new ideas that have come out that maybe we didn't think immunotherapy could be a factor in. What have been maybe in the past, I don't know, decade or so, what have been the biggest changes to you? And that can be immunotherapy related or just generally in cancer research. What have been the biggest steps we've taken in the past decade or so?
Yeah, so, you know, everyone should be really pleased because we've made a lot of great success in cancer. It's been a constant battle for everyone, not only our patients, but our research community. But we've been slowly increasing survival. So probably two decades ago, the chances of being alive 5 years later, if you were diagnosed with cancer, was probably only around 40%. Now it's more than 60%. So overall, the whole field has had incremental slow improvement to the point where now more than half the patients we see are probably cured of their initial cancer. And then in addition to that, there's been certain areas that have been more revolutionary. And immunotherapy is certainly an area where that has been dramatic in terms of clinical results. And there's a number of different approaches in that field. But basically, we see patients who have even failed bone marrow transplants, for example, who are now responding to more advanced forms of immunotherapy. A second area that has been highlighted, I think, a lot in the public press is this whole area of precision medicine, personalized medicine, targeted therapy. This has really come to the forefront in cancer for sure. It's kind of a promissory note for all of health, but there's been a lot of delivered results in cancer. And this goes back more than two decades where we've sequenced the whole human genome. Where, you know, I think the cost was like $10 billion for the first human genome. And people are probably familiar with this concept of Moore's law and chip technology, where the capacity is increasing every 18 months. You double the capacity in technology. But the revolution in genomics has been even more brisk than that. So now you can get a personalized genome sequencing done for probably less than 1,000 hours. And so this kind of unites two fields of research. One is cancer cell signaling, figuring out all the different pathways and the integral genes involved and how they talk and back and forth to each other to lead to cancer. And then secondly, understanding that at the molecular and genomic level, figuring out precisely which mutations drive cancer, and then coming up with new therapeutics that will turn off a specific gene that is dysregulated or turn on in cancer. And so there's been a number of revolutionary targeted therapeutics going back probably at least 15 years in cancer. I would say those are the two major fundamental changes in our approach to cancer. New technology for treatment such as immunotherapy, and then this personalized approach and understanding the genetic risk of cancer.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you bring up the personalized approach. We just talked with Dr. Jose Trevino from the VCU Massey Cancer Center, and he brought that up as well. This idea that he really thinks it's the future of cancer research is kind of honing in on this personalized approach, the idea that every cancer is different, there are subtypes, every person reacts differently to treatments and different cancers. So this idea that the personalization is kind of the important thing to look at as we move forward. Would you agree that moving forward, that personalization of cancer treatment is going to be kind of the focus as we move forward? Do you think that's a big thing moving forward?
I think it's important for the audience to know that we've always had this concept of personalized medicine. You know, as a doc, you know, I see every patient as a little different. I think the revolution is the amount of information that we have, not only on an individual patient, but in terms of the broad area of different kinds of cancers. And the hope is that, again, there's a lot of evidence that this is already realized substantially in a number of patients with cancer. But the hope is that for the future, we'll be able to maybe even prevent cancer based on genetic risk. That would be our biggest win. But then treat every patient. And then secondly, I would say, you know, early screening is really also important. So it's still, even though we're talking about revolutionary therapy, if we go back to the basics for cancer, prevention is extremely important. So, for example, if people stop smoking, or if now obesity is probably the second biggest risk factor for cancer, these are modifiable environmental factors that we could all approach a little bit differently and prevent cancer from ever occurring. Early detection, also extremely important. So despite the fact that we're just emphasizing all the great revolutionary therapy, surgery is still the single best way of treating cancer. So if it's detected early, lung cancer, colorectal cancer, you know, chances of being cured with surgery at early stage is like 100% or so. So that's really important. Also, so the third point, though, is in more advanced cancers or cancers that I personally treat, like leukemias, the personalized genetic-driven mutational profiling type of approach is going to be the future, I think. I agree with that assessment.
So in terms of sort of big picture, you know, you've mentioned that obviously things have changed a lot since you first came into the field many years ago. And in the last decade, there's been a lot of changes too. Where if you, you know, look into your crystal ball and you see 10 years down the road, where do you think we're going to be in terms of what sort of treatments we're looking at? Where's the road leading us?
Okay. That's a really good question. That's something I'm supposed to be doing as a cancer center director. So that's a great question. Obviously, we never have perfectly clear vision looking ahead a decade. But I did want to go back to, and I think people are becoming much more aware of environmental risk. I don't want to underplay the great advances we have in therapy, but I do want to make the message clear. We still have a lot of work to do to prevent cancer from ever occurring. And the two risk factors that we can modify are still really important. So, you know, people that are smoking should stop and try to get in good shape and lose weight. Those are really important. But in terms of the future, in terms of therapy, I think that what we've been talking about will become even more evident. So right now, for immunotherapy, we have a pretty good understanding of which types of patients will respond, but generally it's not complete knowledge at all. So, you know, we may know that maybe 30% of patients will respond to a certain type of treatment, but wouldn't it be nice to know before we even start treatment who's going to respond and who's not going to respond? Yeah. So I think that's the biggest direction that we'll be able to achieve in the next 10 years. Like it's a synthesis of a lot of fields. So large data science, being able to be more facile in integrating all that data is point number one. And that data not only includes like the molecular characteristics of the tumor, but all the data that we have collected in the clinical records and the population as a whole. So the population health, I think, will be really much improved. So I think it's basically a synthesis of a variety of large fields: data science, artificial intelligence, personalized medicine, to the point that when someone comes to see a doctor, we'll probably be able to give them better advice early on that you're at risk of having this occur and you should do this. Right now, we have an idea of who's at risk or certain, but we don't really have action items. So I think, you know, getting a more complete action plan in place will be really important.
Well, I know as we continue to fund more research at great institutions like yours there at UVA and others across the country. We're gonna get to all those places that you bring up. Dr. Loughran, thanks so much for taking a few minutes to chat with us today, and thanks again to UVA Cancer Center for being a mission partner with our Virginia Vine event. Really important to us to have you on board, and we're thankful that you're a part of the event.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Mick. We're really pleased to participate every year. We're a partner, and we love doing it.
Thanks again to Danielle Lavitin, Dr. Jose Trevino, and Dr. Tom Loughran for taking a few minutes to come on the pod and chat with us today. I hope you all enjoyed the conversations as much as I did. For more information on the Virginia Vine event and to register, you can visit v.org/Virginia Vine. Also, make sure you're following the V Foundation on social media @TheVFoundation. And please subscribe to the Voices for Victory podcast anywhere you listen so you never miss an episode. If you want to throw us a 5-star review, that'd be great too. As always, we appreciate you listening, and we hope you'll be back for our next episode, which will be here before you know it. Once again, I'm your host, Mick McDonald. Until next time.
To me, there are three things we all should do every day. We do this every day of our life. You're going to have, what a wonderful, number one is laugh. You should laugh every day. Number two is think. You should spend some time in thought. And number three is you should have your emotions moved to tears. Could be happiness or joy. But think about it. If you laugh, you think, and you cry, that's a full day. That's a heck of a day.